All right, excellent. So yes, this will be rather a different talk. Really, I'm going to talk about sort of this area of quantum simulation or quantum emulation using ultra-cold gases. And my intention when I put together this talk was to try to make a connection with this community, with quantum control. I failed a little bit at that. And I would say that the kind of work I'm going to tell you about today has been moving away from the quantum information community a little bit. And that's maybe a bit of a shame. And so I'd be glad to turn this into a bit of a discussion. Please interrupt. And here we go. All right, so let's see if this will work. Here we go. OK, so I thought what I'd do is spend most of my time on a very extended introduction to this kind of research. And the introduction, I'm going to focus on a problem I'm talking about, but really it applies to everybody doing this kind of research. And then I'll tell you just about one result at the end. And it's a result now where I'm kind of excited. We actually have done this kind of quantum simulation and answered a question that's we hadn't known the answer to before this with any confidence. So it's kind of an exciting single example. And I won't show you much data. I'll spend most of my time on an introduction. All right, so a lot of this kind of quantum simulation, quantum emulation, is really motivated by some mysteries in strongly correlated electronic solids. All right, so that word strongly correlated means in these materials, there's no kind of mean field theory which you can really use, sort of simple theory to describe them. So you know, these are things like high temperature superconductors. You know, we know these things are D-wave, have a D-wave order parameter. Here's kind of a phase diagram for these things. And we don't really understand the pairing mechanism of these materials between the electrons that allows them to pair into this D-wave superconducting state. So that's a little bit of a mystery. And for example, we also don't understand the role of disorder in these materials. We know the gap emerges inhomogeneously. We don't really know how it's related to the microscopic disorder, or even if it really is at all. All right, so one thing I think that's not always appreciated about these topics, and you've probably heard people like me talk about this before, is you know, we kind of know the cartoon of what's going on here. We know the electrons are pairing. In fact, a mystery, a much bigger mystery, is actually what's happening here above TC. And that's a problem I'm going to talk a little bit about today. This is the so-called strange metal regime. This is data showing the resistivity in a material like this kind of material versus temperature. And you can see across a very wide range, actually above room temperature, it's linear. We really don't have an explanation for this. In fact, I can't really draw a cartoon of what the electrons are doing here to give rise to this. All right, so that's kind of the physics I'm after. I want to make an artificial material, a quantum simulator, that'll tell me something about that. All right, but of course, we don't really work with materials at all. We do something completely different. We do experiments on models. All right, so the idea here is people concoct models to try to explain these materials. And what I can really do is do an experiment on the model. And I'll sort of tell you what I really mean by that. OK, so kind of the minimal model of many of these materials, I'm showing a high TC here, but this is a very generic minimal model of these things, is the Hubbard model. So this is a good minimal model for sort of any kind of electronic solid. It's got a tunneling term, which is kind of the electrons hopping around, and an interaction term if two electrons are in the same state, they interact with each other with some energy U. And here's a tunneling energy T. All right, so you don't have to worry about this equation so much. Really, what's going on here is we have spin up and spin down electrons in some kind of lattice. They can tunnel, and if two are on the same site, they can only be there if they're spin up and spin down. They'll interact with some energy U. All right, so the name of the game here is when you study this kind of problem, you make up some description like this, and you want to know, does it actually apply to the solid or not? So the way you answer that question is to try to solve this model and ask, OK, does it give rise to D-wave superconductivity, or does it give rise to this strange metal? All right, so the problem, of course, is we can't solve this. All right, so we can't solve this out of making uncontrolled approximations, which is not really a solution. We can't put this on a computer. We can't exactly simulate it. We get kind of stuck. All right, and the other way you can look at this problem is, all right, so let's say you manage to show that maybe D-wave superconductivity or strange model is not in here. The other question is, well, what would you need to add to this to get those features? And that maybe then tells you something about what's going on in the solid. All right, so what do we do? What we do is we use optical lattices to realize a model like this. And then we try to find out the answers to these kinds of questions. And the one today is, does it give rise to a strange metal? And do we need disorder for that to happen or not? Yeah. Yeah, I'll get into sort of what disorder does. Yeah, I mean, usually this is some kind of uniform model where the sort of energy for just an electron to be in a site is uniform, so we just don't keep track of it here. But there's, yeah, I mean, if I was to write this down, probably I should put some kind of chemical potential on here. OK, and please, yes, interrupt. And I'm going to stop at a certain point for questions, too, to make sure I haven't lost everybody. All right. OK, so our experiment, We use an optical lattice. That is just a periodic potential made from interfering laser beams. And that plays the role of kind of a crystal in a solid. We put atoms in that potential, ultra-cold atoms. I'm going to tell you about an experiment with potassium-40 today. It's a fermion. All right, we're going to pick out two states of that fermion, two internal states to be spin up and spin down. And those are like the electrons in the solid, or to be very careful, in the model. All right, so this is like the crystal in the model, and this is like the particles in the model. Okay, and then we're going to do measurements on these things to try to find out what are the features of this. And we do that because this right here exactly realizes that Hubbard model. We know how to write down the Hamiltonian. We don't know the solution to that Hamiltonian, but we know that that Hamiltonian very well describes what's happening here. All right, so when people ask me what I do, I often say we do experimental condensed matter theory, because what we're really doing is we're doing an experiment on a model. So this is what it means to do an experiment on a model. All right, it's not necessarily about the electronic solid, it's about the model. All right, so I'm going to tell you a bit about how the experiment works, and I'll stop and make sure everybody is on the same page. So this is an ultra-cold quantum gas experiment. So we have a vacuum system. We do lots of laser cooling. I'm not really going to talk about all of that. The goal of all the lasers, which now have been, this is before the experiment got kind of messy, is to produce an ultra-cold gas of potassium-40 atoms, maybe a few hundred thousand atoms, down in this glass cell right here. All right, so there's that glass cell. There's our little ultra-cold gas. All right, what we do is we make that gas, and then we slowly turn on three pairs of laser beams, those red beams there, to make the crystal. Okay. Now, what I'm going to tell you about today is trying to look at the role of disorder and what disorder does to these materials. And I'll tell you why I'm interested in that in a moment here. And so the way we create disorder is we use optical speckles. So right here, turning it sideways, what we've got is a 532 nanometer laser beam. We shine it through a lens, which just looks like a piece of dirty plastic, although it's highly engineered and proprietary dirty plastic. And it produces what looks like a random intensity pattern underneath an envelope, and it's focused onto those atoms. And the atoms experience that intensity as a potential. And so it disorders the perfect lattice that we start with. The great thing in these experiments is we can just put a microscope there, we can scan it, we know everything about the microscopic disorder. There it is. Okay, so what we're doing is we start with this perfect lattice. They're very perfect lattices. We add this disordering potential. We can control the strength of that by controlling the intensity of this light, and that's our disorder parameter, delta, is related to the intensity of that light. And they add together, and we trap the atoms in there. Okay, so you'll see I've got red and blue atoms there. And so what those really are two hyperfine states of potassium-40 that we pick out. We restrict the experiment so we only has atoms in those two states. And those we label as our spin-up and spin-down states. There's just two hyperfine states of the atom. You can think of them as A and B, spin-up and spin-down. You can't have exchange between these states. The number is fixed between these two things. All right, so what we do here is we slowly turn on, and then we do some kind of measurement to see what's going to happen. And what I'm going to tell you next is, why are we doing the specific measurement? I'll tell you about at the end of this talk. All right, so that's kind of like our quantum material, our quantum simulator. All right, people know kind of what I'm talking about when I talk about the experiment here, right? Because it's kind of different what we've been talking about in this workshop so far. Everybody good? All right. This is cubic. So I'm drawing as two-dimensional here because it'd be kind of hard to show you something cubic. It's cubic, yeah. Okay, so now, we have disorder here. So the actual Hamiltonian we realize, and we're adding disorder in because there are some long-standing problems about what disorder does to metallic phases in this model. So really, these interaction parameters and tunneling parameters and an energy to occupy site are now distributions. And because we know the microscopic disorder, we actually know those distributions of Hubbard parameters. Okay, so here's distribution, typical distributions of tunneling, interaction energies, and the energy to occupy site, kind of like a chemical potential. And our disordering parameter delta is equivalent to this width here, more or less, which is controlled by that light intensity. Okay? All right. So we know everything. So the difference between when you do an experiment on a solid and what we do is that we know everything about the solid. All right? We know every single thing that's going on in there. We actually know also what happens exactly when you do a measurement. Okay, so today I'm going to tell you about the dirty metal, all right, in this model. And I'll tell you, maybe sounds a little bit more risque than it actually is. And I'll tell you a little story here. Okay, so what I'm going to do is spend some time on some physics, just kind of a review of some physics, and just so I don't leave anybody behind. All right, so let me just start with what happens when you put fermions in a clean lattice. Okay, so you know, you think about, you know, like undergraduate solid state physics, you know, you get a band structure, everything we do here is single band, and it's restricted to the ground band. So here's energy versus crystal momentum or quasi-momentum. And remember, that momentum's bounded. That's just momentum relative to the lattice. So it has a maximal value. All right, so that's kind of the dispersion for the single particles, single atoms on a lattice, just like a cubic lattice for anything else. All right, so what do you get? Well, you know, you have a Fermi energy in the system. Okay, so just like you learn, again, in undergraduate physics, if the Fermi energy is above the bandwidth, at the bandwidth or above it, you get a band insulator. Okay, in a 3D system, you know, the total kinetic energy available is 12 T. It's 4 T from each direction. This right here is 4 T for one direction. The tunneling energy. All right, so you get one atom of each kind per site. That's a band insulator. And if you push on that configuration, it doesn't move. It's an insulator. It has nowhere to go because it fills up the band. All right, conversely, if you have the Fermi energy in the middle of the band, you end up with a metal, okay, so you have some sparser filling here. And if you push on this configuration, it'll move. It'll support transport. Okay, so the kind of energy here controls the dynamics. All right, so now what happens, this is a non-interacting picture. What happens, you add interactions. When you add weak interactions to this kind of metallic state, and this is really the one we're interested in here in this talk. If you have weak interactions, you know, Landau taught us how to handle this. You get sort of a Fermi liquid. And all that really happens is the particles kind of have to push each other around or drag each other around in some way, and you end up with an effective mass for the particles. And otherwise, it's described by a non-interacting theory, just with a renormalized mass. All right, so when you add strong interactions like you have in the Hubbard model, we actually, there's some controversy about this. You're not quite sure what you get. You know, it's not quite clear you get something like a Fermi liquid. It may be the strong interactions in the Hubbard model are enough to produce that strange metal. We don't really know. If you have very strong interactions and the interaction energy is bigger than this bandwidth, then you get the Mott insulator if the filling is right, and I'll tell you something about that in a minute. Okay, so the puzzle that's been around for a long time is, okay, so we know a little bit about what happens with interactions. We also know what happens in these systems if we add disorder, and the question is, what happens when you have these together? And that's the question I'm after today. All right, so we know interactions in these systems can create a Mott insulator. That's just a situation. It's not a phase transition like it is with bosons. It's actually just energetics with fermions. If the interaction energy is bigger than the kinetic energy scale, and the density is one particle per site, they separate out to individual sites, and there's unit filling on every site. All right. Now that's an insulator. If you put this, does fill the band, and if you push on this, it will not move. We know this, so that's interactions on its own. We know disorder on its own in a system like this will create Anderson localization or an insulator. All right, Anderson localization is a really beautiful piece of physics where if you have a source of waves in a scattering medium, you allow those waves to propagate, and they scatter off other things in that medium, those waves overlap and interfere. And Anderson localization is a pretty freaky thing where there's perfect destructive interference everywhere away from except where that wave starts. Okay, so you have now a localized particle again, localized single particle states, which are do not support transport. Okay, and actually, so we realized Anderson localization with non-interacting fermions in a paper last year, and so you can go ahead and look at that. Actually, that should be 2012. All right, so that's kind of known physics. It's Mott insulator and disorder. That's interactions and disorder on their own. All right, now it's believed, so the question is, what happens when you start with interactions and add disorder, or start with disorder and add interactions? And here's where we just believe some things in these kinds of Hubbard models. All right, it's believed that interactions can disrupt Anderson localization. And a picture you can have for that is if you think about this in a path integral kind of formalism, one way to think about Anderson localization, this picture's from Bergman, Langer, and Neal, is you have time reverse paths which interfere with each other destructively for these waves. And if you have another source of waves, and those waves can kind of collide with these waves, that'll happen differently for the time reverse paths, and people believe this can disrupt localization and give you a metal. People also believe, but don't really know, that disorder can destroy the Mott gap. Okay, so for example, if you have a big enough energy difference between sites, say bigger than U, it might be energetically favorable for these particles to come back and sit on top of each other, destroying the Mott insulator. We don't really know that this is true, and in fact, you can kind of see there's something funny here, where it seems like either one of these ingredients on their own can give rise to an insulator. Either one seems to be able to destroy the effect of the other, and it's not clear really what you get when you put them together. So in these kinds of strongly interacting disordered systems, models of strongly interacting disordered systems, we don't really know what you get when you have these two ingredients together. All right, so we want to try to answer this question. Here's another way of thinking about this. This is kind of the kinetic matter point of view. If I was to draw a phase diagram for this kind of model, here I have disorder and interaction energy. One thing I might have is kind of a metallic phase, and if I add enough disorder, I get an insulator. And what the interactions in this case do for this kind of phase diagram is they stabilize the metal against disorder. I need more disorder the higher the interactions in order to get an insulator. Another possibility, going back to the argument on the previous slide, this is another way of looking at that, is, well, it could be actually that interactions destabilize the metal. And if I add interactions, I need less disorder to get an insulator. So these are kind of competing phase diagrams, and this is kind of the question we want to answer is, what do these phase diagrams look like? We want to use our simulator to actually try to find the phase diagram. All right, and there's predictions out there. This is one from Walter Hofstadter. This is stochastic DMFT. You can see there's a mod insulator, a metal, and an insulator, an Anderson insulator. And there's no real reason to believe this. Walter would say this. Also, you know, it has uncontrolled approximations in it, like anything you do with some kind of disordered Hubbard model. All right, so this is for a disordered Hubbard model. All right, so is this right, is this wrong? That's the question we want to answer. All right, so here's my attempt to kind of connect with this community a little bit. Another way to look at this is it's kind of like a control problem. So it's, you know, we have control parameters, disorder interactions. We know a little bit about what they do in simple cases, and we know that they can tune the states, the quantum states between extended states, like you have in a metal, and localized states, like you have in an insulator. We don't really know how these control parameters work in the strong quantum system. So that's another way to look at it is, what do these control parameters give you in terms of the quantum states, and how does that affect the dynamics? All right, so I'll show you. I've got some time. This is good. I'll tell you about a measurement we did now. The idea is this. What we're going to do is we're going to start with our gas. We're going to slowly turn on our disordered lattice. Okay, so we realize this disordered Fermi-Hubbard model. And the idea in slowly turning it on is, well, we hope we get into the many-body ground state. All right, now there are big questions out there whether or not this is really what's happening, and no one really knows the answer to that. We're going to just kind of, for the time being, assume that's true. That's going to be something we'll figure out later. And then we're going to measure the dynamics of this and try to see, as we vary our control parameters, disorder and interactions, what do we get? And what does that tell us about the many-particle state which is present? Do we have localized or extended states, and do we have an insulator or a metal? Okay, so there's different ways of looking at what we're doing here. Okay, so if there's no questions. Go ahead, Gavin.
Is that the theory you just showed for 2D or 3D?
This theory gives the same answer pretty much regardless of dimension. Okay, it's a kind of mean field theory. And I'll show you later, I'll plot our version of this phase diagram. If you divide by, you know, 4T here or 8T or 12T, you can just get something that should be correct for any dimension. Okay. Anybody else? All right. Okay, so here's, just again, to be really clear about what we're doing, here's Walter's phase diagram. Here's real units on this axis so you can get an idea of how big the disorder is. One way to talk about what we're doing here is we want to measure and see if this is a real phase diagram using our simulator. All right, and we're going to control U over T by the lattice intensity. So if we turn up the lattice intensity, the tunneling barriers get higher, so T goes down. Also, U goes up. Actually, I forgot to say that this interaction comes from low-energy collisions between the atoms. If they get confined on lattice sites more tightly, they interact with each other more strongly. So overall, if I turn up the lattice intensity, T goes down, U goes up, we move on this axis. We'll change disorder by changing the speckle intensity. So we can tune from no disorder to strong disorder. And again, we know what happens exactly on this axis. And we know exactly what happens on this axis. It's what happens in the middle that we don't know. All right. Oh, one detail. OK, this is always confusing about these experiments. You know, these gases are really trapped in a harmonic potential, and so the density is inhomogeneous. So when I say we have something like a mod insulator in there, really what we have is a group of sites in the middle, which at zero temperature would have a mod insulator, so a core, a sphere of mod insulator at zero temperature. And around the outside of that, we have a putative Fermi liquid. Okay, so if it wasn't a Hubbard model, it would be a Fermi liquid, because we don't really know what happens to the reactions. Be careful about what I call that. All right, so that's really the state down in here. It's a little more complicated. It's not that important for the purposes of what I'm going to talk about. All right, and so what I'm going to do is show you some sample data where we basically fix the lattice depth and we crank up the disorder to try to see what happens and try to find this boundary, find if the slope is positive or the slope is negative. All right, so the way we do this is goes back to a measurement we did with disordered bosons, in fact. I should say the answer to this question about the interplay of disorder interactions is very curiously the opposite of what we find here. So for bosons, it's the opposite of fermions, which is kind of neat. All right, so all we do is we have this gas and the lattice. All right, here's the trap, here's the lattice. So that's kind of what it looks like. Of course, it's not to scale. There's really maybe 20 or 30 lattice sites across the gas in every direction. We apply an impulse using a magnetic field gradient. And then the gas starts to move if it can support transport. We measure the velocity right after that impulse of the gas, the center of mass velocity. If it's an insulator, it doesn't move. If it moves, it's not an insulator. All right, so getting something like conductivity out of these types of measurements is difficult. So all we're going to look for is the threshold where it goes from being something that's a metal to being something which is an insulator. We're going to look for when V becomes zero, how much disorder does it require? All right, interpreting these measurements beyond that is somewhat problematic. All right, so here's the kind of data we get from this kind of measurement. All right, so really all we're doing is it's like a transport measurement. We're just pushing on it. That's all you do when you measure resistivity, is you push on the electrons. We're just pushing on the particles and seeing what they do. Here's the center of mass velocity of that gas for different lattice steps, low, high, higher lattice step. Here you should have a mod insulator in the middle versus disorder. And kind of real units, okay, people like me like to think of nanokelvin. All right, so just to give you an idea of what we actually see when we do these, you know, in these measurements, of course, we always do something. We take a picture of the gas. So I'm going to show you some pictures of what happens for these blue data here at relatively low lattice step. For no disorder, okay, so this is a picture of, it's a quasi-momentum distribution. It's a picture of taken after time of flight of the gas, taken in a certain way. Here's a Brillouin zone projected onto this image. So in these data, we tune so that we should have a metal. So we make the density low enough so that EF, and we work at fairly low temperature, maybe about a tenth or a 20th of TF, is well within the Brillouin zone. All right, so we push on the gas. And then afterwards, it moves. It whacks up against the Brillouin zone, which is what it ought to do. That's with no disorder. For quite large disorder, out here, where you can see the gas stops moving, all right, so here's what we have. Notice it hasn't really changed. We're not getting an insulator here, a lack of movement for some trivial reason, like we've made a band insulator. The quasi-momentum is still well contained inside the band. We push on it, and it doesn't move. All right, so that's what's happening out here. So we're really seeing a transition from something which is a metal to something which is an insulator. All right, so, and these data here, where we actually have a mod insulator surrounded by what would be, in a simple picture, a Fermi liquid shell, we really just see the Fermi liquid shell move. So we just see a small fraction of the atoms move, consistent with how much we expect in that Fermi liquid shell. And it's hard to see in pictures, which is why I'm not showing you, but we can do a more fancier analysis to find that. All right, so you're seeing that Fermi liquid shell turn into an insulator there, and the rest of the gas remains an insulator. Okay, so we actually fit these data, heuristically, and we define a critical disorder where, within what we can call zero motion, the atoms get, you know, the gas, the center mass velocity gets within 5% of what we call zero. We call that the critical disorder to get an insulator. Okay, notice here that we never, for these red data, we never see the gas start moving, so we actually don't see any kind of metal, mod insulator metal transition mediated by the disorder. Okay, so here's taking all these data, much more data than this. Translating into a phase diagram, here's like a measured phase diagram from our simulator. All right, so now we plot it in some universal way. All right, so U over 12T, that's the total kinetic energy available in 3D, a critical disorder divided by 12T. Here's some data points we took where we start with what would be a metal inside this lattice. And you can see here the slope is positive. Actually, we know now that interactions stabilize the metal against disorder. It actually agrees with the stochastic mean field theory, even though there's no reason to believe that theory, it seems to capture something. The approximations that were used didn't throw away, presumably, some of the important physics. Out here, what's happening is a little bit more complicated. Here, what we're really showing is the critical disorder to localize that Fermi liquid shell. But I think the main message is what happens here is we see this metal insulator transition, and we see the mod insulator surrounded by the Fermi liquid become some other kind of insulators. We don't know really what they are, but everything is an insulator in this regime. All right, so there you go. Now we didn't see, if you remember back to that phase diagram, there was a region here where the mod insulator should turn into a metal before it became an insulator again. We don't really see that. We also have reasons to believe this is an Anderson insulator and not something else, but I'm not gonna really go into that right now. All right, so this is something I'm excited about. It's an answer to a question, pretty neat. All right, one other thing, in case there's any people here who are kind of experts, we kind of want to know, there's also questions about what disorder actually does to a mod insulator. So one way we can kind of look at that is to look for changes when we add disorder to the occupation on the lattice sites. So if you have a mod insulator, you should have one atom per lattice site. And maybe what the disorder does is change that in some way. We seem to have an insulator, but maybe the number fluctuations on the sites are different. So we actually measure how many sites are doubly occupied in the lattice using a trick that one of my graduate students came up with, Dave McKay. It's really a great trick. After we prepare the atoms in the lattice, we crank the lattice potential up, we apply some near-resonant light, and any atoms that are on a site that are doubly occupied actually blow themselves away from physics where the atoms collide. One goes up to an electronic excited state, and that energy comes back into kinetic energy because of the interaction between the two, and they blow themselves away. All right, so we can do that kind of measurement where we find the fraction of atoms on doubly occupied sites versus disorder starting at this lattice depth where the core is a mod insulator at zero temperature. And you can see the reason we know we have something like a mod insulator is because we have really good suppression of double occupancy. And actually, for the same characteristic density, which is a way of understanding things in these inhomogeneous systems, we would have much higher double occupancy. And what we see is disorder is doing something to that mod insulator where there's more number fluctuations, but it seems to remain an insulator. So this is something we don't really understand, but it's something we can measure. All right, well, let's just skip that. Okay, so some conclusions. So we realize it's a disorder Fermi-Hubbard model using an optical lattice simulator or emulator. We know everything about the model we implement. We measured metal insulator transitions. We're actually able to find out that we don't see a mod insulator metal transition, and we did see that interactions stabilize the metal against disorder, okay, answering this question that that's out there. All right, so next, we want to know the nature of this disorder metal so we can try to probe its dispersion. The nature of disordered insulators, and actually, so there's a lot of things we don't know that are known better on experiments on electronic solids. We actually don't know the temperature very well. So, the reason we're doing these experiments is because we don't have a real theory for this model, and that means we don't know how to invert observables into temperature. So we can put bounds on entropy per particle using the second law of thermodynamics. You know, we start with a trapped gas that's weakly interacting. We know how to measure temperature there and get entropy. We can turn on the disordered lattice, turn it off. We can measure how much entropy we have at the end. So we can put bounds on this. It's about a little over a kb per particle. But we really don't know the temperature. So my group does a lot on trying to figure out how to measure temperature in these systems and actually cool to lower temperatures. So that's a big problem that we need to push on harder in the future. So that's it.
Thank you. Where can you come?
Yes. Right, let's not.
Okay.
Does it make a difference if you use the exact same instantiation of disorder in each experiment, or do you switch it up?
Okay, so this is a great question. There's a lot of questions that are out there about whether or not these kinds of systems with enough particles self-average over disorder. Okay, no one really knows the answer to that. What we have done in the experiment is we've gone to great pains to make the disorder incredibly stable. Okay, so for all these measurements, it's basically the same realization of disorder. Now, I can tell you, when we do have to tweak up something in the experiment, we know the disorders change. We don't really see this change at all. Okay, so the answer informally is it doesn't seem to make a big difference to macroscopic observables like this, right? So transport observables. But we want to be more systematic about that, both with bosons and fermions. We do experiments on both and really find out. We could set up to do this to actually really do a disorder average and see, can we see anything change or not? And we may have to get a little bit more fine-grained with what we measure to really see something change. So that would be fun. Informally, it doesn't seem to make a big difference. Yeah.
So one of the issues with these correlated electron transitions is certainly something I've been concerned with even very recently is the connection between the change in electronic structure going from insulator to metal and the change in the lattice itself.
Right.
Right. So, in fact, 2 weeks ago I was at the LCLS at Stanford and we used our Terahertz field to drive an insulator to metal phase transition in vanadium dioxide. And probed the lattice with X-ray diffraction and saw that the lattice response was slower than the electronic response by, I think, quite a lot.
Cool, yeah.
And my question is, can you use these model systems to address similar questions in potentially simpler settings?
Yes and no. Okay, so our lattice is static.
Yes, because it's formed by the interference pattern.
Right, so it's formed by the interference pattern. So the lattice, so a good thing is we can take that away, right? So there's no structural transition.
Yeah, this is what I was,
So that's good, right? Mm-hmm. So we eliminate that. We've simplified the problem greatly. Mm-hmm. We also, our system's not multi-orbital. In real electronic solids, you know, multi-orbital, their multi-orbital length probably is pretty important. So that's why I was saying, you know, this issue of adding ingredients. So we've kind of taken most of the things away. And now there are a lot of people thinking about how do we add some of those things back? How do we make it multi-orbital? How do we maybe make, you know, we could actually change the lattice on the fly, but how do we make maybe a system where the lattice is self-assembled out of using some more complicated atom or molecule or something like that? So there are people thinking about that. This is like the early stages, right? We've taken everything away, all the complications, and now people are starting to think about how do we put them back in a controlled fashion. So the one you saw here was disorder, right? So we took away all the disorder, now we add it back in a controlled way. So it's going to get more complicated over time, I think, and we'll see how that goes.
What's the time scale over which you can modulate the lattice, you know, the interference pattern?
Changing the periodicity is tricky. To get a significant change in the periodicity, we'd have to change the lattice wavelength, and that's a little tricky. But I don't know, people are clever. Maybe there's a way to do this in some clever fashion.
So you said you seemed happy that the transport properties did not depend on the disorder realization, but I would imagine that at least in the metallic phase, the conductance fluctuations from weak localization should be roughly as big as the conductance in those small samples. So, or am I wrong?
I don't know. I mean, this is a, so I would, I go back and forth on this. I don't really know what to expect in terms of fluctuations and how much it depends on the disorder. And that's something we like to get into, is starting to measure those kinds of properties. You know, like lots of people have done, like Michael Weissman, other people have done noise measurements, right, on these kinds of things. And that would be a fun thing to get into here. Yeah.
I mean, is there a way, because you're not attaching electrodes, obviously.
Yeah.
Is there a way how to translate your way of measurement into conductance and units of the conductance quantum?
It's not simple. So as I mentioned here, there are problems interpreting the center of mass velocity as conductance. All right, so whether or not it moves or doesn't move is unambiguous, but translating that's a little bit tricky. And that, I think, is an open problem. How do we measure something well like conductance? There are groups who have done really wonderful things there. So like Tillman Esslinger's group has now used optical potentials to form a channel and actually imbalance the chemical potential on either side and measure something more like conductance. And so people are moving in that direction, and I think this will get sorted out over time, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, more questions? Okay, let's thank Brian again.
Thanks.
And we haven't been eating for the last 2 hours, but now, fortunately, we have a good long coffee break.